At Jared, we know devotion isn't a once-a-year occasion. And once the flowers have wilted and the chocolates have disappeared, you'll still want them to know how much you care. Dare to give a gift that lasts this Valentine's Day with our incredible selection of jewelry. From delicate rose gold to bold black diamonds, Jared has hundreds of pieces under $299 and exclusive collections you won't find anywhere else. Shop online or find a store near you at jared.com and dare to be devoted.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Troy Noons is an Absolute Podcast. I'm your host, as always, John Casillo, and with me today is Dan Lyons.
Hello, everyone. Happy Spring Game Week.
Happy Spring Game Week. We're not going to talk about the Mets, despite the fact that, knock on wood, they haven't lost since we last recorded.
Every week is Happy Mets Week. I don't know if you've ever watched this team before.
But they don't lose, apparently.
Yeah, they're just in a, you know, 161-1. You know, they slipped up in a little bit since the Cardinals, but pretty, you know, I think we all expected them to win at least 140 games, so it makes sense.
Can't win them all, you know? It's just a really long season, man.
That's true. Only like 91% of them.
Indeed. And we'll spare everybody Mets talk from here. As Dan mentioned, it is spring game week. We made the interesting decision of having it on a Friday night. Ends up, it probably wouldn't have mattered much as far as getting televised. Given that there's kind of like an unlimited inventory of watch ESPN games, plus like half the country has canceled their spring games due to inclement weather this weekend. Syracuse obviously doesn't have to worry about that, not because it doesn't get inclement weather, but because we play inside and almost every other school plays outdoors.
Yeah, we might be in like all the ESPNs this week because I think like everyone in the Big Ten basically canceled, plus I think Iowa State has like tornado warnings or something.
Then Louisville's shifted to our time.
Okay, I didn't see that.
That's annoying.
Yeah, I mean, it's what it is. I'm not too worried about spring game television. I mean, it'll be nice to be able to watch it, hopefully, but I'm not, like, overly concerned about television audience for, you know, whatever our scrimmage ends up being.
This is true. Yeah, I just want to be able to watch it, and I don't really care what the method of doing so is. I'll watch it on my phone if I need to.
Yeah, I'm sure I'll have it on. What time do we kick off in?
It is a 7 o'clock Eastern game.
Yeah, so if one was here, it'd be like 6:50.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was one of my favorite things that ever happened, where people aren't really upset, and I guess, like, somewhat justifiably so, when Doug Marrone just, out of literally nowhere, started the spring game early, and no one was in the dome yet. It was really funny. People were very upset online.
Maybe he just wanted to, you know, have the first couple plays be a surprise.
Yeah, I'm sure they were very, cloak and daggers, trick plays that he didn't want these 3,000 people that weren't in the dome yet to see.
Mm. Yeah, I actually think there's going to be a decent amount of people there, you know, aside from maybe some weather issues. They are doing the select a seat thing again, starting at 5. So there is going to be some things going on. There's going to be stuff happening afterwards. Going to get autographs. I think that for me, like, this is just what the spring game should be. Like, it doesn't need to be anything crazy serious. People just want to, you know, see some showcase of the new talent. And you don't even have to run any or many of the real plays. Like, you can just really showcase how some of the kids that people haven't seen before are looking. Get people excited about the new team and try to convert that into ticket sales. And I think if you add some autograph stuff for the kids, that's kind of a nice, and like, you know, get them to hang out on the field. I think that's a nice, you know, added bonus that'll get people, especially for a free event and free parking, get people to kind of come out on a Friday night rather than just watch at home, especially now that it's so much easier to catch the game if you're not, you know, in Syracuse.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about it a little last week. We have the added benefit of having a very highly touted freshman quarterback who will probably be taking most of the snaps. I don't know. I know Dungy played a little bit in the last game. Is he expected to play much in the spring game?
I doubt Dino's going to say anything about it, but I'd be shocked if he took more than like two series, and I'm sure he'll be marked as all the quarterbacks probably will for no contact.
Yeah, I guess it would make sense since he played in the last one that he'd get some reps in this one, but I think Dungy, I mean, we talked about it last week. Like, we know what Dungy is. Obviously, we expect more from him, and we expect a midseason from him, and we talked about it last week again. Like, I'm not going to ever be too crazy about like whether or not spring game attendance is good or not, because there are so few teams that actually have like impactful spring games, and right. You see it this week. Like, if I don't think Nebraska would cancel its spring game for inclement weather because they make a lot of money, and I don't think Ohio State isn't canceling it. They're one of the few in the Big Ten that are not, that is not, and they sell out. But like when Michigan is turning down the like 30,000 or so people or 40,000 people that were going to show up for that because it's just not worth it for them, like it kind of shows what the spring game is. Like it's for diehards. It's for people who have really nothing to do on Saturday. And otherwise, like, most you know, casual fans can get by with that, and that's fine. I'm not ever going to be too crazy about whatever happens in the spring game, short of, like, a bad injury or the team just looking absolutely dreadful maybe isn't the best.
Yeah, I mean, it was weird last year. I did feel like our spring game was not completely foreboding for some offensive struggles without Dungy, and it didn't necessarily predict how well the defense was looking early on, but you could kind of see some of the hallmarks of both in the contest. You know, it was 10-0 was the final. Offense really wasn't moving the ball super well. But at the same time, like, you saw some defensive strides. I think we'll see a couple more this year. What I'm most curious about, and I guess we can kind of start here, and something that we kind of addressed last week, like, I want to see what the pass rush looks like, and for two reasons. I want to see what it looks like in terms of having most of the team back healthy. You know, Josh Black is back in action. I'm not sure what the status of, you know, Kendall Coleman's going to be necessarily, and some of the other players that have been a little banged up. I know Jake Picard and Coleman have both participated in pieces of spring practice. Hopefully we can at least see some glimpses of them. But, you know, seeing guys like Alton Robinson, who led the team in sacks last year, Kingsley Jonathan, who came on really well, you know, Justin Ellis and Zach Morton. Morton we didn't see any of last year. So those are some guys that I kind of want to see on the line, generate some pressure. But on the other hand, also want to see how this offensive line, which has really kind of become one of the predominant storylines of spring practice so far, and their kind of resurgence and what they're going to be able to do this year with a lot more experience. Kind of want to see how they're going to be able to deal with what should be increased pressure.
Yeah, the defensive line has just been kind of being pieced together the last couple of years. I actually think both lines have some interesting advantages of, like, having had bad injury situations recently, so you have a lot of guys with experience. Obviously, the offensive line, there's a good piece on that in Syracuse.com today about how we have, I think, our first intact, like, five-man line with at least 12 games of starting experience since, like, 1989.
Wow.
Which was interesting. I'm not terribly surprised it's been that long, because usually you don't have all five guys back, or in this case, like, five guys from two different starting lines back.
But I thought 2012 was pretty close.
Yeah, I think maybe we subbed in, like, one guy.
Right.
I don't remember exactly who was on the 2012 line, but we've had some similar lines in the past. But this one, like, has a ton of experience, and I think most of those guys, while, like, being pushed into spots early, like, individually acquitted themselves pretty well as, like, redshirt freshmen or sophomores. So I think with all of them being a full year past that and having all that experience, it should be, if not a strength, at least, like, a major step forward from what it has been. And then the defensive line has just been so piecemeal, but I think there are, like, those individual talents that you can get excited about, like Alton Robinson, like Black, like some of these other players that have had, like, moments. And now, you know, if you can get a full, you know, deeper group together, it might not be perfect, but you have guys that you know can make plays in spots, and if you have enough of those guys, then you're in pretty decent shape in college football.
Yeah, I mean, this is, you know, what I think under Schaefer that Syracuse was never really able to convert injuries into meaningful depth. So this is going to be a test for Babers in a lot of ways. Like, now you have, like we said, on both lines, injuries ended up leading to a lot of starts for a lot of different guys. Now we're able to bring in, you know, not just bring back starters, but bring back usable depth behind them, bring back experienced depth behind them. I'm really excited to see what Robinson can do with an entire offseason. He showed up very, very late in the process. You know, he was an August addition, a JUCO ad, and still he was able to lead the team in sacks. So I want to see what he can do. And, you know, what he can do, what Chris Slayton is able to do. I feel like him and McKinley Williams really kind of got into a rhythm last year with, you know, Caton Samuels, who's no longer with the program. But the two of them are super experienced. I really think, you know, we can get more out of Kenny Ruff. I want to see more of Chris Elmore on the defensive side. Like, there's a lot to like. I'm a little concerned about the defensive tackle position, if only because we don't really have the same depth there that we do on the outside. Nonetheless, I just really like what we're dealing with here. And again, I think it's going to be one of the areas that everybody really pays attention to during this spring game.
Yeah, defensive tackle is definitely one of the, it's been one of the areas of concern for this team for a long time, and overall, like, that's one of the hardest positions to really recruit great depth at if you're not, like, Alabama. There just aren't that many defensive tackles that can really play the position super well. But if you, we have, I think, like, three or four defensive ends that at least have talent, and obviously Robinson put together a really, you know, nice season, all things considered, last year, especially considering there wasn't a ton of defensive tackle help to, like, eat up blocks and get one-on-ones on the outside. And I think that pass rush can really benefit what we're trying to do on defense, where I think we, based on what we've heard from the coaches this offseason, I think we might start playing a little bit of that, more of that, like, high upside ball, where I think they're on the, in the defensive backfield, they're talking about playing receivers closer and maybe going for more interceptions, more turnovers, and then if we can start compiling some sacks, like, you're going to get beaten deep sometimes, and yeah, that was already the case, to be honest. But we were going to beat deep without getting pressure on the quarterback.
Might as well just...
might as well try to get some sacks and, you know, give it your best shot and get the ball back to Dungy and company. So I think that that is what this defense could aim to do down the road, and hopefully we'll start to see a little more of this last year, because defensive turnovers were just so hard to come by for us last year. I don't think... how long did we go without one at the end last season?
At one point, we had, like, six games where Dungy was the only person to force a turnover.
Yeah, that wasn't great. That was off an interception. I think he, forced the fumble, like, relatively close to the Syracuse end zone, which, not your ideal spot.
That one was like, he threw an interception on, like, a screen, and then he was, like, the first guy to the ball and then strip it.
Like, yes, I do remember this.
That was also the game when he, like, kicked somebody in the chest.
Very, very feisty Dungy in that one. I think it was basically after the Clemson game, we just stopped turning people over.
Oh yeah, no, and a lot of winning. And also winning a lot of that, and we've talked about this before, and it's worth talking about that if we talk about the defensive backs now, is like a lot of that was because of the departure of Jordan Martin, who got injured. Like, Martin just added, he didn't put up gaudy numbers at the safety spot, but ever he moved to safety, he seemed to stabilize that you know, the back four, the defense a lot, and provide some real nice help for, you know, Christopher Hendrick and Scoop Bradshaw, who were still kind of rounding into their roles as first-time starting corners, and having Martin back there and really manning the middle, like, as probably the best. I mean, it's not to even slight Cordy, but it's to just say, like, Cordy is a different skill set that doesn't necessarily make him a center fielder. Martin's, what, 6'2", 6'3", can cover a lot of ground and was covering a lot of ground and really helping out the corners and helping reduce those big plays downfield. And you saw once he was injured, unfortunately, that those big play numbers went up considerably. And it wasn't because necessarily that Hendrick and Bradshaw were playing any worse, but because they didn't have that support from Martin and they were dealing with, you know, players that just simply weren't built for this kind of, you know, Tampa 2 system.
Yeah, Martin was definitely a nice addition last year, and having an experience, and like you said, a bigger free safety who could kind of make up for, you know, busted coverages on the outside and really kind of erase those mistakes was nice. And the defense, obviously, when you lose a big time, you know, starter, is always the case, but the defense definitely didn't quite play up to the level afterwards. And I think there was just some fatigue and just some wear and tear on a young team as well. But hopefully, again, you know, I feel like we say this every year, and then there's always a rash of injuries, and that is football to an extent. But hopefully this year we'll have, like, a manageable number of injuries that, like, most teams deal with, and we can actually see, you know, a pretty experienced growing group get to, you know, show what it's built versus, like, having to piece together these units full of players that shouldn't be playing yet. Which I feel like has been the case for so long now. It'll be nice to be able to exhale and, like, reliably say you know everyone who's on the field and you know that they should be on the field.
Yeah, I mean, I'm still a little skeptical, like, because I know we continually over the last couple of years have been looking at, you know, oh, we have a glut of defensive backs, we keep adding more guys, we have all this experience, but we also keep losing guys to transfer. I think at this point, I believe, is Cordy the only Schaefer recruit left in the secondary at this point?
I don't know off the top of my head, but that could very well be the case.
Yeah, I think that is...
I'd have to go through the whole roster.
I mean, I guess Tyrone Perkins counts, but, like, yeah. But he's also... He wasn't recruited as a member of the secondary, and I don't necessarily think he sees minutes back there. Like, I mean, he might in the spring game, but I don't, I mean, I no offense to Perkins, I just don't know if I want a converted running back playing strong safety in an ACC game necessarily, unless we see something like really kind of stunning and that he really took to the position super well, you know, here in the spring.
I'm looking to see if who was, yeah, that might be it.
Yeah,
I'm going through the D-backs now.
We've lost at least three in each of the last two off seasons.
Yeah, which is interesting because you would think that, like, they would understand that because there are so many young guys cycling through, like, you know, a junior or senior is going to have some kind of leg up to play.
Yeah, but I guess what it is.
I don't really blame anyone for going to try to find a better opportunity to play. So
no, not at all. And like with the system fit issue, I mean, if you're a guy like Rodney Williams or Cordell Hudson or anybody like that, and you're trying, not to point out just those two guys, I mean, all of the players that have transferred. If you wanna put together an NFL highlight film and potentially get on teams' radars, playing in a system that doesn't necessarily fit your skill set and having most of your, tape be getting roasted because you're not built for that position and you were recruited for an entirely different skill set, like I could totally understand why you make that decision, especially late in your career.
Yeah, and we kind of saw that with Chauncey Stism, who I think we all kind of lost track of, but I think he had a pretty nice last year at UNLV, and I think he just tested really well in his pro day. So I don't know that he'll be drafted, but it sounds like, you know, that transfer to a different school after, you know, he obviously had that terrible attack and mm-hmm. everything else that went down towards the end of his Syracuse career, but I think that worked out fairly well for him. So you do hope when these guys leave that they do find what they are looking for in their next school. It doesn't hurt Syracuse at all for that to happen.
No, 100%. It's the same way, like, if somebody declares the draft early, doesn't do anything to us for someone to find a better opportunity. I know this year, on top of the other players that left, I know people might have forgotten about Jordan Fredericks, who transferred after his second year at SU, and he'll actually be suiting up for UMass. I think he's contending for the starting job, actually, at running back this year for UMass.
I knew he was at UMass, and I kind of, like, lost track of him after that, but good for him.
Yeah.
I always thought he had a little more ability. I mean, we had some moments with him, and I thought he would actually be pretty a bigger factor for us. But, you know, as these things turn, I guess.
I mean, when Bill Connolly, like, compiled, explosiveness numbers after might have been 2015, I think. And I mean, he actually ranked really highly. And it's not the only thing, but it's something. Like,
yeah, I mean, it points to, like, there could be something here for sure, and I mean, eye test-wise, obviously he didn't put up, like, these giant numbers or anything when he was at SU, but I always thought there was a little more there, and hopefully that he does it for the Minutemen and their weird, crazy schedule they have every year.
Oof. Good luck, UMass.
With, like, I feel like they're always playing, like, four SEC East teams.
Well, the SEC East will take any body bags they can find, so.
This is true.
Anyway, shout out to my sister's alma mater.
No fighting Whipples.
I don't think she went to a game the entire time she was there.
Yeah, because they're like 5 hours away.
Well, by the end of her time, they were actually playing most of their games at McGurk or whatever it is. And she still didn't go to the games.
Do they not play at Gillette anymore?
I don't know how many games they play at Gillette, but they don't. But I know they were playing by the end of her time at least half of them on campus.
That's good, because, like, we make fun of UConn for playing so far away from campus, and that's, like, legitimately, if you have, like, any kind of traffic, that's going to be up to, like, 30 or 40 minutes.
This is so much worse.
UMass playing at Gillette is, like, three times as bad.
Yeah.
It's, like, all the way across the state. At least, like, stores in West and East Hartford are, like, in the relative, like, the general same part of Connecticut.
Right. Yeah, I actually just looked it up. They are not playing at Gillette. No, they're playing one game at Gillette this year. It's the BYU game.
Okay, so I'm guessing that's what they do now, is, like, they do, like, one or two.
Yeah, because honestly, like, this year's schedule is weird. I mean, this is what usually happens on this program. You just end up down a rabbit hole, and you're talking about UMass football.
That's how, like, before the show, we're like, oh, yeah, this will be maybe a shorter one, and then we end up at, like, an hour and 15 minutes as we broke down the entirety of UMass's, like, last five schedules.
This home schedule is garbage. Okay.
Yeah, that's where you're going to get to go to Amherst.
No, this is, I mean, you can get better than this, though. They got, They got a week zero game against Duquesne. And they're on the road until late September against Charlotte.
We have that early week zero now, too, right? We have like that
August 25th for them.
And there's like a bunch. I was looking at this the other day because I forgot if we had an August or a September start this year. And I was trying to plan around my summer.
Mm. Yeah, we got that. Then there's the September 22nd game against Charlotte. Then they're back home for October 6th against USF. Then they host Coastal Carolina. They host Liberty to start November. And then they're on the road again. Well, no, they're not on the road. Then they're at Foxborough against BYU in early November. And then they don't play another game in the state of Massachusetts for the rest of the season. They have at Georgia, and then they have a bye on the final weekend of the season.
I'm glad the SEC is still bringing in their brothers in arms at UMass.
But good Lord.
Why is Georgia playing them?
How do you get any... It's basically an FCS game that doesn't count against you.
It's exactly what it is. It's just funny that this one division has like realized this and is taking full advantage of it.
Well, it's also because the ACC doesn't need to play UMass, so they already play BC. That's not like shade. That's more.
I was going to say because I think some people might interpret that a little differently than you meant it.
Yeah, that's. I mean, sure, that could be shade if you really wanted to. No, but it's the fact that like. You don't really need more exposure to Massachusetts from a football standpoint.
Yeah, no, you don't really need that much anyway, because right. There are very few recruits in New England. I'm looking now at last year. Last year they were at Tennessee, and then Georgia Southern also played them and lost because Georgia Southern was just absolutely terrible last year. Then they were also at Mississippi State, which I know is SEC West, but still. And then 2 years ago, I feel like they had... I know South Carolina played them recently. They hosted Mississippi State in Foxborough.
Didn't Vandy show up to McGurk like 2 years ago?
And they went to South Carolina. It might have been three for Vandy. I just know every single year there's like a weird number of these SEC schools on there.
Yeah,
on
their schedule. I just don't understand like
for some reason FB schedules like 2015 link for UMass like just doing than how they normally have their links just. Didn't work for me.
Oh, it's probably dead.
Oh, they were in the Mac.
Okay. Yeah, that's why. Yeah, this doesn't make any... Okay, so 2020, their schedule does not look all that impressive. 2021, they face Colorado and BC. That's the thing. Like, these are weird schedules, and like you're not going to get anybody to show... Like, 2023, they have 5-game schedule, and they're all road games.
I'm surprised BYU is scheduling them, if only for the fact that UMass's schedule is like the ghost of like college football future for like BYU if things really don't go well.
Like, what the hell is this? Like, 2022, their home games so far confirmed are EMU, New Mexico State, Liberty, and Army. Like, who's going to these games?
There's no. What was their average attendance last year?
I'm sure it was one of the worst figures in the entire country.
It could not have been more than 4 digits.
Also, unrelated question. How is Hawaii getting University of Albany to show up in 2023?
I saw that.
Like,
that's so funny.
How many FCS teams are between University of Albany and University of Hawaii? I feel like it's all of them.
Virtually all of them.
Save New Hampshire and Maine.
Except for Maine and New Hampshire. Does Vermont Central, doesn't have a team, do they?
No. Central Connecticut State.
Yeah.
Monmouth, I don't know.
Just is like, Monmouth further east than Albany?
No idea.
No, it's Jersey. It can't be.
True.
Stony Brook.
Oh, yeah.
I guess it depends on like how you measure it, but right. Stony Brook is further east, I imagine, than Albany is.
Yeah, that definitely is. This is stupid, though.
Wagner's up in the air.
Yeah, like, why would you... If you're Albany, there's just so many... Like, is this a recruiting tool?
I don't... It must be.
It's like, hey, kids, we're going to go hang out in Hawaii for a week.
I mean, I don't really... If I'm an Albany player, unless you're, like, very studious, maybe you're annoyed. But, I mean, I guess there are worse road trips. Like, it's maybe a once-in-a-lifetime thing.
And you might actually win.
There's a chance. I think Hawaii, you know, is kind of salty. They're interesting, at least. They're not very good yet, but...
They were half-assed good, like, 2 years ago, and then they just sucked last year.
I still think Rolovich might put put it together. I think he's a pretty good coach, and I think there's a decent chance that if he does fail, it's more about Hawaii's being a really tough situation than him being a bad coach.
I think if he fails, though, I don't know, really know where, like, Hawaii goes from there.
I don't either.
Because, like,
Norm Schau, bring him back.
Because, like, you look at the Mountain West right now, and, like, we're going to have a Mountain West preview episode during the summer, but, like, you look at the Mountain West right now, and it's Boise and San Diego State and, like, maybe Fresno. And, like, nobody else is, like, I guess Wyoming, but, like, nobody's really figured themselves out consistently except for the first three I named. Like, that's an open opportunity for literally anyone else to just get mildly good. Like, you saw it a couple of years ago with Wyoming getting to the Mountain West title game. Last year, Fresno was able to bounce back under Tedford. Like,
and that Fresno turnaround was so crazy that, like, it wouldn't shock me if they came back to the pack. And I don't expect them to fall back to, like, 3-9, but... That was just such a precipitous turnaround that I think there's a decent chance that there's some serious regression to the mean there.
Give me San Diego State to win that division once again.
I wouldn't bet against it.
Anyway.
I haven't really looked at it, but I wouldn't bet against it.
That was your 7 to 10 minute... just
UMass, Hawaii, Mountain West.
Yeah, complete diversion into other stuff. Before halftime, we're just going to talk linebackers, and then we can kind of focus a little bit more on the offense. I know we mentioned this before. We're not going to get into the position chain stuff too much. Dan, how do you feel about this linebacker group, and what are you looking for from them? Not this fall, but more. What are you looking at to see out of them on Friday night?
I think as long as they play like strong assignment football, I'll feel pretty decent about it. I don't expect them to obviously lead the defense like that group has for so long. Like, this is the... I feel like the first really, like, rebuilding year for our linebackers in a long, long time. And that's what happens when you lose, like, three really solid players. But you return guys like Andrew Armstrong and a couple others. So as long as they're just not making huge mistakes, and you know, if we get some nice plays out of them, we'll be happy. But I just think they need to play, like, sound, solid football. Yeah. And otherwise, like, you know, it's tough to really... imagine them breaking out and having the same impact that the Franklin Paris Bennett group did.
Yeah, I mean, I'm really excited, and I mentioned this last week too. I'm really excited to see the Ryan Guthrie experiment, middle linebacker, and see how that goes. Just because he was such a different type of player at the JUCO ranks last year, we played him a defensive end a little bit. He's more of a tackle for loss guy, which is kind of like the old mold for Syracuse. So having him plug in there. Versus one of the outside spots. It definitely gets intriguing to me. If you look at this linebacker group too, like the three guys that are slated to start, we're kind of going to have to hit reset again. This is kind of a stopgap year, and I don't really think we've had one of these at SU in a while. You know, from a linebacker standpoint, I feel like for the last like probably 7 to 10 years, we've been able to like either have like, you know, 3 and 4 year guys or at least 2 year guys come in. This year, you know, Guthrie's a senior. Armstrong's already a junior. Whitner's a senior. It's kind of just biding time for guys like, you know, Akeem Williams, who's going to be another stopgap. He'll be a senior next year. Don't really know where Shai Cullen fits in, if he's going to be able to contend for a starting job or not. I think we're going to be looking to the future, though, with guys like Tyrell Richards, you know, Nadarius Fagan, some of the others. Like, Kadeem Trotter is probably in that conversation, too. But yeah, we haven't had a situation like this where we've had like a stopgap year or two waiting for linebackers to build. But again, like that's what real depth is. And we've discussed this at length. You know, the Greg Robinson era really murdered our ability to have meaningful depth. Marone only started getting to a place where there was meaningful depth at the end of his tenure, and then he left. And then the Schaefer tenure kind of knocked all that depth right back to square one. So it's not a commentary necessarily on Baber's system and calling the herd. It's more a commentary on just how much transition there's been, you know, at SU in these last 10 to 12 years.
Yeah, and it's really, frankly, been kind of an anomaly that we've had such strong transition between our linebacking groups, basically since, like, the Darrell Smith, Doug Hogue teams. Yeah. So I think this is more, you know, you're not always going to get, like, a fully clean slate, but, like, we just seem to move between like one or two starters every year. To like, this is going to be the first time in a long, long time that we've had no returning starters at the position. And I think most schools probably experience this a little more often than we have. So it is weird. And a little disconcerting just because it's been such a such a strength for a long time. But I think the hope is that you have some of these, you know, other young guys step up and become real factors, because like you said, this isn't a very young group, even if it is an experienced one.
Yeah, and you know what? Like, all these guys have played. Whitner played most of his time, admittedly, in the secondary. Guthrie, like I said, saw some time at the end front. And then Armstrong, you know, has played backup to Zaire Franken for the last couple of years. So, like, their starting experience might not be as much for what we need. But I'm hopeful that this becomes a surprising group. And I hope, too, that they're kind of strengthened and bolstered by the better play of the guys both in front and behind them.
Yep, definitely. I think that's what you have to hope for. And then, I mean, I still think we have some talented players here. So
totally.
All of the above.
All right. I think it's a little halftime for us then, Dan. What have you been imbibing of late?
It was a relatively light weekend, although I had some big, some nice finds. Let me see. I'm going back to, I have to look up the date to see the last time we, was it 5th? I think right after we recorded last week, I had the Road to Ruin double IPA from Two Roads, which is, I've talked about them a decent amount, one of my home state breweries up in Connecticut. I had the Camp Juana Mango by Harpoon, which was a pretty nice, like, mango, I'm trying to remember if it was a mango IPA or just a pale ale. I think it was just a pale ale, but it was quite good. And then the biggest one that I found this week, which I know you'll appreciate, is that I had a Maine lunch. For dinner, so not super appropriate, but it was, that's one of those where, like, basically any of the big ones by Maine Beer Company, like, if I find them on a menu, I'm going to have it, so I had that, and I must have forgotten to check into one when I was at Jacob's Pickles, because they have a great beer menu, and I remember I had a second beer, and I will try to find what it was while you read yours.
Fair enough.
They had KBS, but I didn't have a KBS.
KBS, so I saw KBS at Costco the other day.
Oh, it was Mary by Hilton Harpstead, which was always good.
There you go. But yeah, I remember when the KBS craze was insane, and yeah, now you can find it at Costco, so good to know for everyone that waited in line all those times.
That's something. I mean, I feel like KBS pops up, at least around here, like, there are much harder beers to find when it's on, when it's available. It seems like everyone's getting it, so.
Yeah, it's not what it used to be in terms of rarity.
Yeah.
On my end, I had, from the Collective Brewing Project over in Fort Worth, I had Woodfolk. It's an American Wild Ale, aged in some sort of barrel. I don't have that in front of me, but that was very good. A friend of mine sent that. I stopped over. I'd had some of their beers before, but I hadn't been to the brewery in the Arts District in L.A., Boomtown Brewing. So I had from them What Goes Around, and then Nose Job. It's a really good West Coast IPA that I'm a big fan of. Felt that it was the right. I felt like it was more on the dank side of things, and that feels what I'm looking for in an IPA. Like I enjoy you know, a New England style, but I'm a much bigger fan of the West Coast IPAs, as I mentioned before. Also had a mic check from them, just a Czech Pilsner. What else did I have? Went to the Galaxy game on Sunday. It was really a lot of fun down in Carson. Beforehand, stopped over at the Honest Abe Cider Company, just a local cider and mead spot, not too far from the stadium. Just had their pineapple cider. Also had, they had this apple pie a la mead that was very intriguing. Had a lot of vanilla notes going on. I didn't hate it, but it was definitely a little bit sweeter than I thought it was going to be. I haven't had mead in a while. I went to a mead tasting once in San Francisco. That was pretty interesting. So yeah, I'd recommend trying out some mead. Maybe you won't like it, but you never know.
I've had mead, but I don't think I've had it since. I think someone once when I was at SU brought some back from, I think, the Finger Lakes as a meadery.
Oh, nice.
And I'm pretty sure that's the last time I've had it. But yeah. I remember being surprised by how much I enjoyed it. It is very sweet, though.
Yeah. And I'm not necessarily big on sweet. Strand Brewing makes a special for the StubHub Center beer, Cuplifter IPA. It's about the MLS Cups that the LA Galaxy have won, and they sell that there amongst their collection of other local craft beers. They actually have a really impressive setup there for food and beer. I really like that a lot. Definitely be back. My first Galaxy game that I'd been there, because now that we have two teams in MLS, it's a little bit easier to get tickets. So that's much appreciated. And then also down in Houston, where I was the last 2 days, had from Real Ale Company, Axis IPA, and then I also had from St. Arnold, Summer Pils, just a Hell's Lager. That is very good and a staple for, I'm sure, most of the folks in the Southeast Texas area probably drink quite a bit of it during these warmer months as they're already getting started down there.
I don't know what warm months are anymore.
Yeah, well, you know what, Dan? That's kind of on you guys in the Northeast. You know, you have options here. This is a very large country.
You know, I don't appreciate your California bias here.
Your liberal coastal elite.
I don't know that our upstate New York listeners will appreciate me saying it's cold down here, so.
You coastal elite member of the media sitting around in your ivory tower slash condo. In very chilly 65 degree and windy weather.
You don't even know the half of it.
I can imagine the half of it.
Somewhat chilly.
I once lived it, and I never have to again.
It's true.
Anyway, back to cold climates in Syracuse. Not going to talk about Syracuse weather. Rather, we're going to talk about the Syracuse offense a little bit. Dan, do you think we're going to see Antoine Cordy on offense in this spring game? I feel like it's going to be kind of an obligatory thing just because we've talked about it so much this spring.
I think we kind of have to, right? Because, yeah. Like, if you're not going to show him, you know, catching passes, then, like, what are we doing here? Like, I think we all were pretty content with him on defense. So I think you kind of almost have to have him do something, just even if it's a you know, proof of concept type deal.
Yeah, I think we see him a couple times. I think if he catches a pass or two and he looks good doing it, I think he'll stick around on offense in the spring game. If not, I think they'll just put him back on defense.
Either way, I mean, it'd be kind of weird for me to have this whole, like, experiment and then have him just move right back, like, a month later. But
I mean, we've done it before.
That's true. We also, like, I think we moved Damon Murkison positions, like, 4 times during 1 year, so... obviously that was actually Marone, but actually no, that was Robinson and then Marone, back to back seasons. But, so there is precedent for guys changing positions a lot, but it'd be pretty funny to like, just do this for the spring and then move him right back. And he's like, oh yeah, now he's just one of our main defensive bats again. Like nothing ever happened.
Well, I mean, so, yeah. I wouldn't put it past Babers if just because I feel like he likes to have a good time with the local media in the sense that like he'll have us chase something for a bit, like not in like a malicious way.
What if he actually never moved him? What if it was all a ruse? Like he lined him up at receiver like during like the 5 minutes that the media's allowed to actually watch spring practice,
and just
went right back to DB anytime like Stephen Bailey wasn't putzing around. Like
I feel like, you know, I do feel like Julian would have sniffed that out.
That's fair.
Like if there was one person who'd be able to get a good read on that, I feel like it's him.
I would actually like I think if that was actually the case, and there's no indication that is, but in the hypothetical world that Babers just decided to troll the beat writers for no reason.
Oh, I'd respect the
like,
game.
I feel kind of bad for like Steven and Nate and Tris, but like I think at least like two of the three, and I don't even know who two, but like I feel like just knowing our football staff, our football beat writers at Syracuse.com, like they'd probably appreciate it more than most. Because that'd be really funny.
Yeah, I mean, I would appreciate it. I would find it pretty entertaining, especially because I haven't spent a ton of time writing about it. Which is,
It would also definitely be one of those things that got like a lot of attention on the internet, just because it's like, oh, look at this goofy spring football storyline that happened at an ACC school. So I'd be all for it. I don't think that's the case. I think we are actually seeing if we can move him.
Yeah.
But part of me now is rooting for the conspiracy theory that the Antoine Cordy position change is a false flag operation.
Fingers crossed. Trying to think what else we want. I mean, to be honest, the wide receiver position is just fun in general. We don't really have to talk about Riley and Butler because I feel like we talked about them a bunch last week. I really want to see what we can get out of Nyheim Johnson, RTB, Russell Thompson Bishop. Could be a really nice... I always had him pegged as a bit of a deep threat. He's in the slot right now. That could get interesting. He's not, like, huge. He's, like, 6'1", 217, so he's bigger. He's not going to be your Jamal Custis size. I think he's the one I'm most curious to see, and that's another one we talked about last week. Having him and potentially Ravion Pierce inside at the same time could get really exciting if we start running some two tight end sets. We start getting some semblance of a red zone offense, which is something that's just kind of eluded us for what feels like decades now. I want to see a little bit of that. I know, you know, Babers isn't going to give away the secret sauce on that, but just kind of want to see what those two guys do together on the field. Sherrod Johnson is another guy who, you know, we didn't really get to see last year. He traveled with the team all year. I'd like to see him on the outside operating too. I know I'm right now looking at the, you know, the pre-spring depth chart. So if Custis has moved inside, that's also going to shift a couple other things around. I don't really know who takes that starting role. I'd be a little worried to see Butler and someone completely inexperienced, whether that's, you know, Sherrod Johnson, Nakeem Johnson, or even RTB, like, out there on the other side. It's just such a critical position for us. And while there's been turnover in the 2 years that Babers has been here, there hasn't been inexperienced turnover. And that would be my one big worry. Not necessarily having, because we saw what happened last year when, you know, when Custis was injured and we had some questions on the outside, like not necessarily having a ton of proven options to catch the ball. I mean, people have risen to the occasion, but I would be a little bit more worried than I have been in the past.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about this a decent amount, like overall. It's just such a big question mark that it's going to be kind of a, we're kind of, you know, all learning together here where this wide receiving core is going to be aside from the little we know about, like, Sean Riley and, you know, Custis. I think we kind of have an idea, but he hasn't really done much. And then obviously Ravion Pierce, I think we said last week or 2 weeks ago, whenever we lost about the receivers at length, is, like, honestly probably the most experienced guys we have coming back, and he just played one season. So, right. Overall, I think I kind of appreciate it. Seems like Babers is really experimenting and trying to find new things and piece these, you know, this unit together, because for the first time, he doesn't have, like, lightning in a bottle with Edetabo, and he doesn't have Ishmael, who we all, you know, who was an experienced player and who we all knew was going to be good, if not quite as good as he was last year. You know, we really get to see Babers' chops here coaching receivers with this, like, essentially all-new group, aside from, like, a couple spots of serious playing time with, like, Riley and Pierce and company.
Yeah, I'm psyched about this, and I know I mentioned last week too, like, tight end spot, like, Pierce is one name, obviously, it's going to come up a lot. He made a really big impact in his first season. Hopefully, if the offensive line has improved this year, and it seems like it's going to be, then we can plug in Pierce more as a receiver. So I'm really looking forward to seeing him. I don't know how much we're going to see Aaron Hackett, and I mentioned him last week, and I'll mention him again. Holy Cross transfer Jesse Connors, who sat out last year, walk-on, but somebody who could really make things interesting. I know we saw him a little bit in the spring game last year playing kind of a Ben Lewis role, and that hybrid nonsense that we had in the, you know, Method Cat offense back in the day.
Oh, God, I had forgotten about Method Cat. Not the offense itself. I had just forgotten the name.
I'm really mad I can't find the Photoshop anywhere of Tim Lester in the Samurai Pizza Cats hat.
Earlier today when the Chipotle curse Desto tweets were going around, I had this, like, weird, like, zone out moment of, like, what if Chipotle got really mad at us?
Well,
like, what if the website got sued by Chipotle after I made a joke about burning Chipotle down?
I mean, can you really, like, I feel like
we'd be covered by, like, parody law.
Yeah,
and obviously
would.
I didn't actually mean to burn down the Marshall Street Chipotle, but the thought did pop in my head.
I mean, we do have, I feel like we'd be fine on a legal standpoint just because there's a, like, almost decade-long category on the site for the Chipotle curse.
That too. And I was also thinking back to how long it's been going, and it's, what, at least, like, 2010?
I think it's still since at least 2010. Yeah, so we're almost going on a decade now. I feel like this is, I feel like
once
we're
you
good.
Make the same, once you make, like, 8 years of jokes about something that very few people are actually aware of, I think you should be, like, inoculated from any kind of legal troubles.
Right. Now, of course, something happens to Chipotle. Dan, I would maybe find a safe house.
I live, like, 4 hours away, so I should have a good alibi. If the Marshall Street Chipotle does burn down, I'm not terribly worried.
Fair enough. Anyway, which of these offensive linemen excite you the most? I'm really excited to see Aaron Roberts back in action. I want to see. It seems like Cervais has been getting some go at the, was it guard position?
Cervais is back at right tackle, I think. Wait, I could be wrong. I know there was a whole article on this today that I did read. I just don't have it open, and now I do. That's the 19. Yeah, he's at right tackle. And Roberts is, because you have Conway and Adams at left tackle and right guard, respectively, who have basically 2 years of starting experience each.
Right.
And then you have Roberts at left guard, Heckel at center, and Cervais down at right tackle now, who all have a year. So it's a pretty exciting proposition. And I all those players, I honestly think are all pretty good. I know the offensive line hasn't been very good as a group, but I think all those players have had moments where you can say this is an ACC starting caliber offensive line. And as is brought up in the Syracuse.com article, these are the bones of a group that hung with and beat the Clemson defensive line, which is one of the best defensive lines we've seen in college football in a long, long time. So, I think this is definitely, I think there's a decent chance that this becomes a strength of the team this season, which is exciting because that has not been the case for so long. And that would just make, I think that would really be a game changer for this offense that has kind of succeeded in spite of the offensive line for a couple of years now.
Well, you and I said too, it just sucked at the end of the year when the offensive line put in three straight solid performances. But the problem was because Dungy wasn't in, because the offense was kind of a mess over the final part of the season. The efforts they put in just got kind of squandered. And that was unfortunate because, I think it did kind of gloss it. It, because of the losses, it put a bad taste on what was actually an improved group over the course of the year and, doing a pretty good job without Roberts being in there and available to us. Heckel's move to center is interesting, obviously, just because he was recruited as an offensive tackle. I know, obviously, people, move around the line. That happens. I always thought, and we said this last year too, you could see, it's not that Cervais was bad at center, but you could see Cervais kind of, the tempo of things would wear on his snapping ability over time. And he wasn't a bad blocker, but the snapping stuff did harm the team a bit. Especially as, Dungy was on one leg and, playing Mad Max or whatever the hell he was doing back there. So yeah, I think that moving him out of that center spot could be a help for him and a help for the whole line. I'm excited about this group just because, we've had those really good games at the end of last year. Most of these guys were on that three-game stretch we had in 2016 against, what was it, UConn, BC, Virginia Tech, where it was just this nice swing and they were really, really well-graded on some of the advanced metrics in each of those. And I mean, no, two of those teams weren't exactly world beaters, but being able to open some holes, being able to run a little bit better, and protecting Dungy most of all, led to some wins. And hopefully, once again, I think we all know, anyone who's watched Syracuse knows that keeping Dungy, on his feet is more often than not going to result in Syracuse at least being competitive against just about anybody.
Yeah, they've had some really nice performances, and they bring back Roberts, who honestly was probably the best in the group. I think we were kind of saying that last year, heading into the year before he was hurt. So definitely, I think you have to be cautiously optimistic until you actually see it, just because it's been a while since we've had great offensive line play. But I think on paper, this should be the best group since that Justin Pugh, Zach Chabain group, which had some really strong years.
Yeah, and several future NFL players within it.
Yep, and Justin Pugh, who I can't remember exactly how much money he just made in that new contract with the Cardinals, but I'm pretty sure it was a decent amount. So
Arizona making a late push to be Syracuse Southwest.
It's probably the best option. I mean, you have the Jags, obviously, which is more coach based.
But it was the Giants. New York's college NFL team.
It's very much like the life cycle of a New Yorker, where it was the Giants for a while, and now it's a team in Florida and a team in Arizona.
And the next part is the grave. So that's not...
You said it, not me. I merely inferred it.
That's fair. As long as we all
we're
know. Actually,
we're just in a golf for a while, so that'd be fine.
You're gonna play 18 holes in the dry 125 degree heat.
I've been through Jacksonville. I can assure you there's not a dry heat there.
Oh, no, I was talking about Arizona.
Yes. I have not been to Arizona, but I'm sure it's a little more of a friendly climate than Jacksonville, which is very large and swampy.
Arizona's hellfire in the summer, though.
Yeah, I don't think I would go in the summer. Although, honestly, like, I don't mind the dry heat. I mean, I've been to Vegas the last two summers, and I'll take Vegas 100 over, like, New York City 85, honestly.
Totally. No, I am right there with you.
I don't know if Arizona's, like, much worse, but...
Arizona can get significantly worse, but it also depends, like, where you are in the area. Like, Arizona was getting to, like, 125 last year, like, no problem.
Yeah, I don't need that.
Yeah.
But, like, I've been very, like, pleasantly surprised by how decent Vegas even at 100 is.
Yeah, plus, you know, you get some drinks, you get by the pool, you're fine.
And then nothing matters, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, that was another weather sidebar. Dan, you think anything weird happens it's at the spring game? Think there's anything Babers says, there anything that we're not expecting happens? Does somebody come out with 44? What are we looking at here?
I think we'll see at least one, like, pretty fancy trick play just to, like, win the crowd over. But overall, I think it'll be a pretty reserved spring game experience. But I expect at least, like, one or two flashy plays just to, like, get some headlines.
I agree. I'm not expecting anything wild. To be honest, I think the funniest thing would be that the situation we described earlier of everyone just getting the rug pulled out from under them on a Cordy.
That would be a thing that most people in the building wouldn't appreciate, but, like, a couple people would note it. Like, the really diehard fans would notice and be like, oh, wait, what?
Like, why? why did you do
this? Why was this? Why did we do any of this?
I also am, like, just curious in general, like, some of the guys that, like, Swiss Persistence, if that'll actually stick. Guys like Schritzinger and Perkins in particular. Also, I didn't mention him earlier, but I do kind of want to see Ifeatu Melifonwu. I know I probably just murdered his name, but he was somebody who was, like, pretty highly touted. Michigan made that late push on him, and he ended up sticking with us. I do want to see him at corner. He came in as a safety, so I am curious just kind of how much work he gets there. And maybe he ends up getting into the rotation this year, since, again, highly touted guy.
Yeah, that'd be fun. I think all of these, you know, all these new guys that aren't Tommy DeVito, like, obviously we know Tommy DeVito is going to be probably the focus, but, like, any new player that you can see on the spring game, that's always exciting because it really is the first action you get to see versus, like, you know, obviously we all like to see our friends back in action, but I think, like, the one thing you can really take away is just to see how a guy, like, moves around the field and looks in the jersey, and these are, like, dumb things, so they don't really matter until September, but they are something you can, like, cling on to for the next couple months.
Agreed. Dan, where are you watching? Home, office?
Probably home.
I will be doing the same. But hopefully some of you guys go out, and if you don't want to, that's fine. Again, spring game doesn't matter.
Yeah, if you're in the Syracuse area, like, I get it if you don't want to go, but, like, we have nothing going on.
Yeah, free. You're doing anything. It's free. Parking's free.
Bring the kids, get some autographs. I think they usually have the new schedule poster, which is always fun.
Yeah.
If you get one, feel free to send one down to me.
Same here.
Yeah, so.
Although I have nowhere to put it.
There are worse ways to spend the day.
Yeah, it'll be fun. Again, looking forward to it. It's nice for me because I actually get to watch it at 4 p.m. and then still have the entirety of my evening.
Always good.
Always good. Anyway, Dan, thank you as always for joining. Much obliged.
Yes, always a pleasure.
And yeah, everyone, be sure to rate, review, subscribe on iTunes, on Blog Talk for Troy News and Absolute Podcast. I don't know. I'm sure there's other places that you can evaluate us or whatever. Feel free to say nice things. Or if you don't want to say nice things, just email it to us. I enjoy hate mail. I'll usually post it to Twitter and just start messing around with you. So
yeah, I was gonna say we reserve the right to, like, probably take your email address off depending on how we're feeling about it, but to post it to Twitter and make fun of you.
I usually do. Shout out to that guy that said that he was, for the first time, he was ashamed to have a Syracuse degree after reading one of my articles. He didn't say which one though.
That's so unfortunate, because that's the information you need.
That's critical info. And then he also had some grammatical errors within his letter, which I just found to be unfortunate for him as someone who was correcting somebody else's grammar and syntax.
Yeah, I mean, I'm ashamed to get emails that aren't grammatically correct from fellow Syracuse alumni.
Just, I hope one day I can be so self-satisfied to be an old man yelling at kids for not being. I was also millennial shamed for those who haven't had the experience before. It's great to be a 30-year-old man told by a fellow adult, you know, what you should and shouldn't be doing.
How dare you be born in the years following 1984, John?
I had everything to do with it, too.
Ugh.
I time-looped. And
what gall?
I time-looped and then made sure I had the dates to be after 1984, like on purpose. Anyway, that was Dan. I'm John. Thank you, everybody, for listening again. Be sure to watch the spring game in some way, shape, or form, and go Orange.
Go Orange.
At Jared, we know devotion isn't a once-a-year occasion. And once the flowers have wilted and the chocolates have disappeared, you'll still want them to know how much you care. Dare to give a gift that lasts this Valentine's Day with our incredible selection of jewelry. From delicate rose gold to bold black diamonds, Jared has hundreds of pieces under $299 and exclusive collections you won't find anywhere else. Shop online or find a store near you at jared.com and dare to be devoted. At Jared, we know devotion isn't a once-a-year occasion, and once the flowers have wilted and the chocolates have disappeared, you'll still want them to know how much you care. Dare to give a gift that lasts this Valentine's Day with our incredible selection of jewelry. From delicate rose gold to bold black diamonds, Jared has hundreds of pieces under $299 and exclusive collections you won't find anywhere else. Shop online or find a store near you at jared.com and dare to be devoted.